Well, guys, in an act of kindness, and, you know, because it was homecoming, the Patriots had a little bit slow start just to be nice to the Texans.
So that's what we're going with.
I guess so, yeah.
We're nice to the Broncos, too.
Yeah, because I can't...
Panthers.
I really have no other way to figure out how or why they had such a slow start. I figured coming off such a horrendously, you know, bad condition game Denver was, the offense would go into Houston, great conditions, and just come firing, but they didn't.
So was it a trap? Do you think it was a letdown?
I don't know. It's a good question.
I do. And I think that in retrospect, I thought that it was a trap game going in. I didn't think it would be that big of a problem. But, you know, you can look at it and see the two primetime games that you had, Monday night game in Carolina, obviously the comeback, the epic comeback against Denver. Signs pointed toward a little bit of a letdown. I didn't think it would be this bad because I thought Houston had sort of packed it in. And I didn't expect them to put up the fight that they did, but you allow a 50-yard kickoff return on the opening kick, you give the other team life, they get a lead, and then all of a sudden you're in a dogfight. But
right.
In retrospect, yes, it's absolutely a trap game. I thought that going in. I just didn't think it would be that much of a trap game that they're going down to the wire to win.
But again, what surprised me is not so much the defense. We know the defense is banged up. We know the situation there. I figured with the conditions that they had played the week before, coming into this kind of sterile environment it is down in Houston, the offense would be, you know, firing on all cylinders from the get-go, and that just wasn't the case. Was it simply Brady being inaccurate, or was there more to it?
Certainly early. I thought he was very inaccurate. He had some of those early short passes where he made Edelman and those guys work, and he ended up with like 2 or 3 yard gains, where normally he puts it where they can turn that into, you know, a nice gain, six yards, 7 yards. And then the interception to Gronkowski, I thought, was a really, really bad throw. There was a play there to be made, and even if you don't connect on it, at least give Gronk a chance to break
right.
it up. It was lobbed so short.
If you're
it just
long,
never got...
you're never wrong.
That's right. Especially with Gronk.
Right.
Especially with
right.
Gronk. And that's, you know, I keep bringing this up, but that's the third time this year, in just 6 games here, that we've seen him throw to Gronk and not even give him a chance to make a play on the ball. And that's, to me, really disappointing.
Is it because he has to be so precise with the other players, he doesn't compensate for the Gronk wingspan, and I don't have to be so accurate with
him? Well, I think he was just a little off in Houston. Even, I mean, look at the Gronk touchdown catch where, you know, it's a long developing play, lots of protection, which is great for the offensive line. Gronk has to kind of break off his route, turn it upfield, and then he throws it way down at his ankles and makes Gronk make a spectacular catch. For a big guy like him, that is a spectacular catch.
Really?
I just think Brady, you know, you look at the numbers and go, wow, he threw for 300 yards and he completed 70% of his passes, but I think if you actually watched the game, this is one of those where he wasn't perfect throughout.
Yeah, well, especially early.
Yeah, well, some of the completions, and then even you know, later on, some of the ones he missed, I think he had Edelman on a deep ball that he sort of led him a little bit too far across the field. So Andy's right. I think even some of the completions, the shorter stuff that we're used to seeing, you know, a little bit of run after the catch, he put in a position where the guy had to just sort of make the catch. But just, you know, the second half, the typical Brady in handling a good front and getting the ball out quick and identifying where to go right away, and you end up throwing the ball to wide open guys like Shane Vereen for that walk-in touchdown. And I just think that so much of that is on Brady and him identifying what the defense is doing and, you know, leading to some other things that we're probably going to talk about later.
Well, the run game is one. Obviously, Stephen Ridley was a healthy scratch for this game, and, you know, we know why.
Well, there were 46 other guys that were.
But were they missing him is the question. They averaged, I think, 3.3 a carry.
Yes.
When he's in the game, it's always over 4.
And they were all under 3.8 a carry, I think.
Yeah.
And he's been, individually, has always been up by 4.5, 5 when
yeah.
he's played this year. There's no argument. He's your best runner. It would be easy if he wasn't your best runner. Then you would just bench him, forget about him, and it wouldn't be an issue. Because he's your best runner, that's why it is an issue. And yes, they were missing him. I think they would have run the ball better with Stephen Ridley than anyone else because he's the more talented of the group. But you still won, and you still moved the ball certainly effectively in the second half when it was right down the field 5 times in a row.
And I don't think any of us are questioning the decision not to play it.
No, I agree with it.
I mean, what else do you do?
I don't know where you go, and it's going to be interesting to see where he goes from here. But no, I don't have a problem with it. You know, 3 games in a row, 4 lost fumbles overall. At some point, you have to say, you know, the production that he's giving me is not great enough to withstand that risk factor. And you know how important all coaches, but Bill especially, that ball security. what did I always say, the number one goal for every play is to make sure you end the play with the ball.
And that's even magnified this year because they're playing so many games that are down to basically a possession. 9 of 12 games have been decided by a touchdown or less. We saw it in Carolina. You could argue they may have lost that game because Stephen Ridley turned the ball over in the red zone. That's how close, you know, now you have back-to-back field goal games. You can't afford to be putting the ball on the ground in those games.
Well, whether it's this show or our radio show or the newspaper, the questions that are coming in, a lot of them have to do with the fear of the defense going forward, especially if when they get into the playoffs. The current state of the defense, people just aren't convinced that they can win a championship with it. You know, what do you have to say to them?
And I know that you've been a big backer of this, Freddie, you know, with the health. And it's unfortunate because I think at the beginning of the year you saw some signs that were positive. You saw some games, quite frankly, that the defense won, you know, 13-10 and, 23-21 opening day in Buffalo when the offense couldn't really seem to get out of its own way. So the defense showed that it could do it at least against bad teams. We never really got a chance to see what it could do, you know, against some of the better offenses because the pieces slowly started to go away. Now you're dealing with a run defense that has never been a problem since Belichick has been
really.
They've been outstanding against the run, and now you're missing Vince Wilfork in the middle and their best linebacker in Gerard Mayo, and it's been night and day different. They can't really stop anybody on the run. It was a scary game on Sunday in Houston, but to me, the scariest moment came late in the game where Rob Gronkowski caught a pass and came up limping. And to me, that was all the scare that I needed to see. He right now is the most important player on this team. He's clearly the MVP. The offense has been night and day since he came back. Last four games, the Patriots are converting third downs at a much higher rate, about 50% compared to about 33% before that. Brady's completion percentage up around 65, 59 without Gronk. To me, this is just too easy. Right now, they cannot afford to lose the tight end because he is making the entire offense go. Injuries have also been a huge concern in that secondary. We've seen pretty much every member of the group banged up at one time or another. Alphonso Dennard wasn't able to play. Aqib Talib and Kyle Arrington are fighting through some injuries, as is Steve Gregory. But what we're starting to see, it's really affecting the way they play. No more do we see Aqib Talib just lining up playing man coverage on a guy like Andre Johnson that he took a couple of times last year. It was a lot more zones, and the zone coverages, to me, just weren't anywhere near as effective as what we saw earlier in the year, especially from Talib. So we're going to need to see these guys get a little bit healthier so they're able to do a little bit more, because I don't think the zone defenses are where the Patriots want to play. Injuries have really had that defense, the entire defense, on the run, and that has been especially true against the run. One guy I've been really disappointed in that regard is Dont'a Hightower. I thought he had an opportunity to really step up with Gerard Mayo out of the lineup, and right now he's just been sort of out there. He's not really making a tremendous amount of plays, hasn't been great against the run, and hasn't been great against the pass. We haven't seen him rush the passer at all, really, this season. So to me, this is a guy in his second year I expected bigger things from. 270 pounds, really good athlete, comes from a great program at Alabama. Bill Belichick says he wishes he had more players playing at that level. I respectfully disagree. I just haven't seen it so far from Hightower. It's going to need to get better because those other guys, they're not coming back.
Coming up on Patriots Football Weekly.
My coworker, Andy Hart, everybody knows here, you know, little meathead, stocky guy.
Morning Meeting is brought to you by Verizon. Stay connected to your Patriots at home and on the go with Fios Quantum Internet and NFL Mobile from Verizon. That's powerful. Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you in part by Putnam Investments, a proud partner of the New England Patriots, pursuing performance excellence for 75 years. Images of the Week, brought to you by Jack Daniels. Please drink responsibly.
Images of the Week from the Patriots' ninth win of the season. This first one is Gronkowski. I thought, despite Gronkowski's numbers, the Texans did a pretty good job when he went over the middle. Here's one of Gronk when the Texans didn't do quite a good job. Here's that play in the game when Brady had a beautiful pass over the head of the Texans defense right into the arms of Edelman. Finally, we'll end images with a fullback touchdown.
Player Perspective is brought to you by Putnam Investments, pursuing performance excellence for 75 years.
at Patriots fullback James Devlin this week. James, usually I like to start these interviews by exchanging some pleasantries, but I got to call you out a little bit here first. Okay. I saw a quote after the game where you really gave a lot of credit to your offensive line on your touchdown run, and I just want to know which one you were pointing out, because it didn't appear as if any of the Texans were blocked on that play.
Well, I mean, they did get some guys down. They were, you know, there's some piles in there, and you know, I'm just glad to be able to fight enough and get in the end zone on that play.
Is that just kind of the prototypical fullback touchdown? Where you, I mean, I think I lost track at about four broken tackles, and just you wouldn't go down.
Yeah, I mean, fullbacks, you know, we don't get many opportunities on the goal line like that, so I knew that, you know, that was going to be, you know, my one and only opportunity if I didn't get in. So I just tried to fight and, you know, lower the pads and just try to keep the legs turning and get in there.
And I was joking around with you before we started. My coworker, Andy Hart, everybody knows here, you know, little meathead, stocky guy, high school fullback. He really wanted to do this interview, but then he was worried about the restraining order that was going to have to be taken out against him. He has an affinity for fullbacks. He got a little overexcited on your touchdown,
okay,
man.
Hey, yeah, I mean, it's a fullback nation, you know. We don't get much publicity, so it's always cool to see someone get in the end zone.
Now, you come to the Patriots, and, you know, sometimes, you know, we know it's a game plan offense, and sometimes it's going to be accentuated. It looked like this week with the Who Man out that maybe your opportunities increased. You were out there a lot of two-back sets and a lot of lead blocking. Is that, you know, you get a little extra juice, you know, heading into a game, because obviously you knew that you were going to be a bigger part of the game plan this week. Do you feel like that, you know, that extra adrenaline as you lead into a game?
Absolutely. I mean, anytime that I, you know, that I'm called on it, I'm excited to get in there and kind of get my nose dirty and just kind of smack some guys around. And, you know, and in the NFL, more than anywhere else, it's always the next man up. You know, Who Man was, we're unfortunate to not have him right now, but, you know, I knew that my role is going to grow just a little bit more, and I got to get in there and just do my job a little bit better.
Talking about the matchup with the Cleveland Browns, it starts with wide receiver Josh Gordon averaging 248 yards per game over the last 2 weeks. Amazing two-week stretch, but guess what? He's been good all year. Since being suspended for the first two games, he now has played in 10 games, has over 1,200 yards receiving, 7 touchdowns. He is a beast to deal with, 19.5 yards per catch. Who knows if he'll have a quarterback to get him the football, but Gordon is a guy that Aqib Talib and everyone else needs to keep an eye on. Normally, when you're facing a team that doesn't have a lot of stability at quarterback, you'd think they're going to run the football. Problem for Cleveland, they don't run the football very well. Willis McGahee is a skeleton at this point in his career, signed with the team after the Trent Richardson trade, averaging 2.8 yards per carry as their leading rusher. Browns as a team, just 3.7 yards per carry. So a Patriots run defense that has struggled in the running game of late and all year, allowing 4.5 yards per carry on the ground, should be a good week to lower that number against a running back who averages barely half that. Patriots do have a quarterback, Tom Brady, and he's hot going up against a Cleveland Browns defense that's a lot like the Texans. On paper, they look pretty good. Number 4 overall in yards allowed, number 5 against the run, number 5 against the pass. Kind of a no-name unit. Joe Hayden probably going to go to his first Pro Bowl as a cornerback. Other than that, not a lot of stars. But when you look deeper, Browns are not very good in the red zone, bottom of the league. They're not very good in turnovers, bottom of the league. The Patriots can find some room to make some plays if Brady is as hot as he's been, and I expect that to continue.
Coming up on Patriots Football Weekly.
Someone once told me you don't need to run to win, and you know who that was? Who was that?
Me.
That was Paul Perillo.
Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you in part by Ace Ticket, the official travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you in part by Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots. Around the NFL, brought to you by Nissan.
When it looked like Chip Kelly was going to get a head coaching job in the NFL, a lot of people said he's not going to be able to run that offense he did at Oregon. There's no way he's going to fail. But, you know, I was of the thinking, Chip Kelly's a smart guy. He'll try it. If it doesn't work, he'll do something else. And we found what that something else is. It's Nick Foles. This guy has started 6 games, played in 9. He's got 19 touchdowns, no interceptions. And you know what Chip Kelly said the other day? He's going to be our starting quarterback for the next 1,000 years. That's the sign of a good coach. You don't try to stick that square peg in the round hole. You play with your personnel. Nick Foles is the Eagles quarterback.
For anybody to assume that I intentionally found myself in Fred Kirsch's stand-up is ridiculous. Sometimes I like to watch up on the video screen. I lose my positioning on the set. It happens. I would never infringe upon his personal space and his time to speak. And if you buy that, then I got some land I can sell you. It's under a bridge in the desert with nice waterfront property because Mike Tomlin is ridiculous. Take your medicine like you should and move on.
It was another tough week for the officials, and I know what you're thinking. Here goes Perillo getting ready to beat up on the Zebras yet again. But I got a curveball to throw, a good 12-6 curveball for you. Yes, the officials screwed up the end of the game for the Giants and the Redskins. The headlinesmen should not have moved the chains. They should not have made it a first down. The referee said third down, and that's what it should have been. But it didn't matter. The Redskins are making way too much of this than they need to. Whether it was first down or third down, they were trying to move the ball. They were trying to get it downfield. And that didn't prevent Pierre Garçon from letting the ball get ripped out of his hands by Will Hill. Terrible play by him. Terrible whining by Mike Shanahan. Terrible whining by RG3. Enough. They made a mistake, and it had nothing to do with the game.
Trash Talk. Brought to you by Waste Management. Remodeling or just have clutter to get rid of? Waste Management's new Baxter. Dumpster in a bag can take it on.
Stephen Ridley sat out the Houston game, but is it time to get him back in the lineup?
As sad as it makes me to say this, I think Stephen Ridley is just about done here. And I don't need to see him back out there against the Cleveland Browns because I'm sure he'd be fine. Do I think he'd fumble? Probably not, because he's gone plenty of games in his career without fumbling. But I don't understand what putting him out there against the Browns or the Ravens, the Dolphins, the Bills, what does that prove? You're still in the back of your mind going to say, when it's on the line come January, can I trust him? So I think you need to go with your other horses and go with the guys that are probably going to be the guys come January.
Well, I agree that no matter how long he goes without his next fumble, it's always going to be in the back of your mind. But I think you need this guy. I think he's good enough. He's the best runner you have out of that backfield. And I think you need him to sort of balance out your offense. We saw a little of that. I know they were productive in terms of how many points they scored. They got to 34, and that's what you're looking for. But 3.3 yards a carry is not what you're looking for. And I think they clearly missed Ridley. I think they got to get him back out there. I think they have to hope he doesn't fumble. He needs to be back in the lineup.
This team is not winning the Super Bowl because of its ground game. This team will win the Super Bowl, will get to the Super Bowl, will win in the postseason because of Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, and an offense that is now capable through the air of putting up 30-plus points on a consistent basis. Otherwise, it's committee time. And I understand it's easy to say, you know, this week, because they were in the 3-yard range with the committee approach, that, okay, that's not good enough. It'll be fine. Either way, that's what it has to be, because you cannot have Ridley costing you football games come January.
They might not win it because of the running game, but could they lose it because they don't have one?
No.
And that's, you know.
Someone once told me you don't need to run to win. And you know who that was? Who was that?
Me.
That was Paul Perillo.
Me.
I have my passing attack. That's how you win in the NFL. You don't need to run to win. You said it.
But because I don't think you need to run to win doesn't mean that you're intentionally making your running game worse. I think that that's what this is getting to here. I think Ridley gives you more of an opportunity to make some yards. I do want to get short yardage plays. I do want to be tough in the red zone. Now, listen. I think moving forward, Ridley gives you the better opportunity. I think he has a good nose for the goal line. I think he is good when you get in those goal-to-goal situations. I don't know if the other guys can do it. Listen, Blunt and Devlin were able to get you rushing touchdowns last week. I don't know if you can rely on James Devlin to break 5 tackles at the goal line to get you a touchdown every week. It was absolutely a great play. I think Stephen Ridley gets in on those plays on a consistent basis. That's what I want him for. I understand there's risk. I think you need to get this guy back on the horse.
I'm just going to stick with the wise words of my wise, old mentor who told me you don't need to run to win in the NFL. Stick with the passing game. Brady takes care of the football. Ridley doesn't.
It's a wise man.
Tonight's show is brought to you in part by Nissan. Choose Nissan today for great offers on our most innovative lineup ever. Shop at ChooseNissan.com. New England Football Night is brought to you by AT&T. Rethink possible. Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you in part by Roach Brothers Tasty Tailgating, official tailgate partner of New England Football Night. Read and react. Brought to you in part by Yokohama, engineering the most advanced tires on the road for nearly a century. Yokohama, technology drives better tires.
All right, it's that time of the show where we answer your questions on PFW. But first, the Wilson Heart Power Index.
And coming off a big 1-2 matchup on Monday night, Seattle and New Orleans, and Seattle was victorious. The remarkable thing, though, Fred, is at this point in the year, Seattle is the highest-ranked team we've ever had. Their index number, 1.667. One would be perfect. They're getting close to perfect. But also the drop-off from 1-2. Carolina now number 2, 6.83. Carolina actually closer to the 10th spot than they are to number 1. That's how big the divide is between Seattle and the rest of the NFL.
It was a 1-2 matchup, you said, going in, correct?
Yeah.
Seattle and New Orleans. So that means Kansas City's 3.
Yeah,
so
they were number 3 before.
So they didn't drop down.
Well, they played a good football team.
So they lost three
they
games in a row.
Against a
right.
good football
they gave
team.
Up 41 and 35 the last 2 weeks. Nothing evidently Kansas City can do is going to affect their spot in the
West. That tells you how dominant they were before their defense got injured and fell apart.
I have no further questions.
Thank you.
All right, this first one comes from James Marshall, and he says, in the last show you talked about Vince Wilfork being on the sideline in Carolina.
Yep.
He wants to know if he was on the sideline in Houston. He thinks it's a good idea to have him on the sideline, but he didn't know that injured players usually travel, and he remembers back in 08, Tom Brady was nowhere to be found.
Well, injured players don't generally travel, but he's a captain, so he's a little bit different. He was not on the sideline in Houston. A little bit different there. He was for Carolina, and then here at Gillette Stadium for the Denver game, he was on the sideline. As a captain, he can provide something, but now you'll say, well, Tom Brady was a captain. It's a little bit different with the quarterback position. I think the thinking behind it was they didn't want Matt Castle sort of looking over his shoulder. That was Matt Castle's team. You know, Brady had to sort of be gone and forgotten. We're not trying to replicate Brady. You don't want to be doing things as a receiver that Brady likes. You have to do things that Matt Castle likes. So I think the quarterback position is different, and that would have been a big shadow sort of looming over Matt Castle as he tried to take control of that team.
The second one comes from David Watley. And he knows that this is a contract year for Edelman. Should they sign him now and not let him walk like all the other receivers, according to David?
Well, everybody else just goes.
Right.
I think there's a chance that you might see him re-sign at some point. You know, maybe even, you know, down the stretch here, or if they can get a bye in the first round of the playoffs, maybe in between their last game and that bye week, sometimes they get some bookkeeping done. If he gets to free agency and he's out there to explore, and he stays healthy the rest of the way, I think there's a chance that he's going to get a significant offer. Maybe the Patriots might not want to match that. Don't forget, $31 million for Danny Amendola, similar kind of position. Not sure how much they want to spend there. And I know that they all walk, but
right.
I do think there's a chance you could see him re-sign. He certainly earned it.
All right. Every week, send your questions to AskPFW@Patriots.com.